You're listening to the Boogeyman's Closet Podcast. Explicit language and spoilers ahead. You've been warned.
And we are back for yet another episode of the Boogeyman's Closet. As always, I am Mike Alvarez.
Maurice Killifer.
And I'm Susie Hunt.
And this is episode 58. We're continuing our summer camp slashers with Friday the 13th, part 5, A New Beginning. So this is the first time we've had a Friday the 13th. Oh, no, I keep forgetting about the remake. This is the second time we've had a Friday the 13th in the regular rotation. I always forget that was the second episode that we ever did, was the Friday the 13th remake. But, yeah, normally we do these as specials, so it's fun to have it as a regular entry. But this is from 1985. It's an hour and 32 minutes, and let's go around the table. Susie, we'll start with you today. What do you think about A New Beginning?
Did anybody else watch the Super Special Edition?
I don't know. I watched whatever was on Amazon.
Okay, because there's a song that was actually cut from the movie.
Oh.
But I wrote down the lyrics. Ready?
Yeah.
Here's a story of the fateful Jason, who was killing everybody in the town, all because he saw his son's bloody body killed at the halfway house. I lie, I made that up.
That's amazing.
I even Jason Goes to Hell has grown on me over the years. And at first, I really liked this movie because the whole sequence with Demon, that's my favorite part of the movie.
Yep.
Followed up with that ridiculous like interlude with Lana and Billy. But watching it critically, I noticed yesterday when I watched this that when it's pouring rain and Pam and Reggie are running, Pam is not wearing a bra. I never noticed that before. I've seen this movie countless times. But I think the kills are good. I fucking hate the greasers. I thought they both had it coming to them. Yep. And I like the idea of the revenge killer. And after watching it again, I wish that they would have picked up with part 6 where part 5 left off at the very end. And I know we've talked about Tommy being, you know, the killer going forward. I kind of wish that it, maybe on Earth 2, that's the route that it took. But I like it. I like the kills. I love the, you know, the call and response in the outhouse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want an enchilada? You want an egg roll? Demon, it's just, he's my favorite part of the movie. And Junior and Ethel are just, you know, your stereotypical white trash, and poor Tommy is just fucked up. And I just want to say that for someone who is in a mental institution, he sure is buff.
Yeah.
Even though he always looks like he's crying or like he has the flu.
Yeah.
But I really like this movie. But what I don't like is that they don't explain what happened to Trish.
Yeah, we only hear her in echoes.
Yeah.
It's like, okay. And there, and we see the picture that he's looking at longingly, you know, of his family. It's like, yeah. Okay, what happened to the family? Well,
are
we know
they
what happened
all
to
dead
Ma.
Now?
Yeah.
Right.
But so Maurice, what are your thoughts on this one?
I like it. It's not one of the better ones, but it's better than Jason Goes to Hell.
I was only using that as a point of reference, meaning that I didn't care for that one, and I didn't
and
really care for this one.
And it's better than Jason Takes Manhattan.
You know,
I hate that movie.
That one has really grown on me over the years because it's so ludicrous.
That whole scene where he turns into a child because he's in water, just it ruins the whole movie.
Well, I don't think he actually turns into a child. I think that's what she's seeing. But I mean, we'll get to that.
I don't care. It's stupid. It's just stupid.
We will eventually cover it, I'm sure.
We will. But no, I mean, I like the movie. It's not a bad movie. I like the idea of the imposter Jason.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one thing I did notice watching it critically, every time somebody dies, the next scene they show Tommy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
To make you think that it's him.
Yep.
I've never actually put that together before.
They try pretty hard to like give you that red herring over and over again.
But knowing the result, every time they show Roy,
mm-hmm.
it's like, all right, I already know he's the killer.
There's a really funny moment with that, but we'll get to that.
But with, you know, Roy being the killer, I don't know, I thought that was cool. I mean, it's not like he's just some maniac going on the killing rampage. I mean, he wants revenge for his son. So
yeah.
And this movie has one of the best killing, in my mind, one of the best Jason killings. So, but yeah, overall, good movie.
Which, I mean, now I'm curious, which one is your favorite?
The killing?
Yeah.
Eddie. With the
the belt
and the just him twisting it.
Yeah,
that's one of my favorite Jason killings.
I'm with you on that. That's a great death scene, and it's not even that gory. It's just the idea of it.
The idea, you got to put yourself in that situation, and it's like, oh
yeah, that freaked me out when I was a kid. It still freaks me out now. But, no, I'm with you guys. This is actually, it's funny. When I was younger, this was one of my most hated of the Friday the 13th, simply because it wasn't Jason. You know, and then it's like, as I got older and watched the series more regularly and kind of watched them as a whole, rather than watching whatever Friday the 13th happened to be on TV at the time, you know, I started to appreciate this one more and more. And I gotta say, after watching it critically for the first time, I really like this movie. Like, it surprised me how much I enjoyed this. There's a lot of little flares here and there that I really enjoy about this flick. And at the risk of sounding like a pig, all I gotta say is God bless Deborah Voorhees.
What relation to Jason?
Yeah, no, that was one of the best dem titties moments we gonna get. But yeah, I mean, this movie is fan-fucking-tastic. Like, the killings are fun. There's a lot of ridiculous dialogue. Like, tons of the I like cheese dialogue, but it's funny. Like, there's a lot of genuinely funny moments. Like you said, the stuff with Demon and Anita, like, that whole sequence is fucking hilarious. Ma or was Ethel and Junior, like, they're just, oh my God, they're so over the top. Like everything is just great. Even like when Tommy flips his shit, like every time he flips out, I couldn't stop laughing because it's just so ridiculously over the top. Like he goes from 0 to 100 every time. It's like, fantastic.
Where did he do like ninja training?
Right. Well, it was like he was in the WWE in the one moment. He just picked up dude, fucking spun him around and body slammed his ass.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, I loved it. But so, yeah, I think we're all I really don't think we're ever going to find a Friday the 13th that any of us are like, oh, this was terrible. I mean, maybe part 8 with Maurice. I know you said you're not a fan, but you got to admit, even part 8's got some really funny moments.
Oh, it's got some great moments. It's just
plus it's Kane Hodder, you know, so.
Yeah, that's its saving grace.
My favorite scene in that one is still the boxing sequence. I laugh fucking time. But anyway,
every time I watch it, I'm like, well, maybe he'll win this time.
Holding out that little nugget of hope.
Mm-hmm.
But so yeah, let's get into this. This is the director was Danny Steinman. Now, I haven't seen any of his other stuff. He did a movie called Savage Streets, High Rise, and The Unseen. Apparently,
I kind of want to watch that Savage Streets. It had a pretty good, decent cast in it.
Yeah, I was reading a little bit about it. It sounded interesting. Actually, so did The Unseen. The Unseen sounded pretty good, too. But it's kind of sad. Like, I guess this guy, like, after this film, and it did, and in spite of what a lot of people say, it did do well at the box office. They gave him, there was going to be a sequel to the original Last House on the Left, and he was going to do it, But he ended up getting into some kind of accident. He was on his bicycle. I don't know if he got hit by a car or something, but it said he got into a horrific accident on a bicycle, and he ended up in the hospital for a long time and spent years in physical therapy. And he kept trying to get back into filmmaking, and he just never got back into it. So it's kind of sad. Like, this guy did a pretty damn good movie, had what looked to be a promising career on the horizon, and then an accident stopped it. So, kind of
Savage bummed. Streets is available on Amazon Prime.
There we go.
Mayhap we should watch that. But this has got a huge cast. Like, I have a lot of people in here, so I'm going to try to get through it quickly. But we have Vinny, played by Anthony Burrell, Hamburger Hill, Miami Vice, Law and Order. There's a lot of people in a lot of TV shows in this as well. Joey is played by Dominic Brescia. I don't know how to say his last name, but he was in Once Bitten. We've talked about that a few times, the Jim Carrey vampire movie. Also in Night Court, Amazing Stories. Then we have Neil, played by Todd Bryant. One of the movies I really want to get on this show is Night of the Creeps. That's one of my favorites. He was in that. He was also in Murder, She Wrote. So we got our alum there. Les was played by Curtis Conway. Got nothing else. Robin, played by Juliet Cummings. Psycho 3, Slumber Party Massacre 2, which eventually we will have on here. Because we got to have the Driller Killer.
I love that movie so much.
I know, me too. It's so bad, but it's so fun.
Yeah.
We got Eddie, played by John Robert Dixon. The only thing I saw, I haven't seen any of his films, but the one I had to take note of was a movie called Assault of the Killer Bimbos. I'm like, that's a title you just can't walk past there. You kind of need to know what it's about.
Huh. No, go ahead.
I was going to say, of course, we have Young Tommy, played by Corey Feldman, which we've already had him on the show multiple times, but Lost Boys, Goonies, Gremlins, etc., etc. Anita, played by Jer Fields. She was in Different Strokes, Facts of Life, Chips, bunch of 80s TV shows. Violet, played by Tiffany Helm, 21 Jump Street, and Freddy's Nightmares. Pam, played by Melanie Kinneman, was General Hospital and Cheers. Ethel, played by Carol Locottle. She was in the remake of The Bad Seed, the 1985 remake. I don't know. Have you guys ever seen that one?
No.
Nope.
Nowhere near as good as the original. it's worth a watch if you want to see a remake of it, but stick to the original black and white one. But let me see. Then Demon, of course, played by Miguel Nunez, one of my favorites from Return of the Living Dead. He played Spider in that one. He's in Shadow Zone, Lethal Weapon 3, Street Fighter. He plays DJ. He's actually probably the only thing in Street Fighter worth watching it for because he's fucking hilarious. he was at Leprechaun 4, Leprechaun in Space, and Carnosaur Part 2. He's also in Scooby-Doo. Then we have Pete, played by Corey Parker, Duckman, 30-something, Will and Grace. Jake, played by Jerry Palin. The only thing on his list was Soul Man, that horrible movie. Reggie, played by Shavar Ross. Mork and Mindy, The Love Boat, MacGyver, Magnum P.I. He's all over 80s television. Teenage Tommy is played by John Shepard. He was in Friday the 13th, the series, and Quantum Leap. And then Raymond, played by Sonny Shields, Dukes of Hazzard, Greatest American Hero, and Beretta. Junior, that guy's such a weirdo, played by Ron Sloan. He was in Tales from the Dark Side and The Facts of Life. Sheriff Tucker, played by Marco St. John. He was in Superman, Cat People, Monster, Hard Target, The Punisher, bunch of movies. Duke, played by Caskey Swam. He was in The Dukes of Hazzard and Matlock. Victor, played by Mark Venturini, another Return of the Living Dead character. He played Suicide in Return of the Living Dead. Knight Rider, another Murder, She Wrote alum, and the movie Space Rangers. Now, it's sad because he passed away really young. He had leukemia, I believe it was. He was only like 30-something when he passed away. Then we have Tina, played by Deborah Voorhees, Dallas, and Avenging Angel. And then the last couple, I got nothing. George was played by Vernon Washington. Roy, played by Dick Winend, and Matt, played by Richard Young. So Didn't see anything of note. But so big fucking cast.
Yep.
A lot of fucking people in this movie. And I mean, there's a reason for it. They want to keep you guessing who's doing the killing. I mean, obviously we've already talked about this, so we're not going to hide the fact that Roy is the big bad in this movie. He's the killer. But they have such a vast cast for this because they want you to go like, oh, is it that guy? Maybe it's that one. Maybe it's them. Because there's a lot of moments where we get the ominous Jason music over normal shit. So,
true. And a million jump scares that are mostly animals and
a lot of dumb
visions of Jason.
Yeah. So basically, again, for anyone who hasn't seen this movie, it's continuing the story of Tommy Jarvis from part four. He's still kind of haunted from his past when he killed Jason. We don't know exactly what happened between him being a child and now, but he's clearly in he's ended up in a couple mental institutions. We find out that little bit of information, and they've tried to heal his trauma, but it just hasn't worked. So now he's at this, it's a camp for troubled youths. Is that?
It's a halfway house.
Yeah. Halfway house. Okay, yeah. So basically he's there and killings start to happen.
Well, they wanted to do the movie with Corey Feldman, but he was too busy working on the Goonies.
Yeah. Yeah, I had read that. So it was going to be a completely different film.
Right. So they jumped to the older version of Tommy.
Mm-hmm. Well, plus that whole opening was supposed to be different. Yeah. Which, so real quick, when the movie opens, it opens with young Tommy Jarvis in the woods, walking through the rain, looking for Jason's grave. Now, originally, that opening was supposed to be, like, him in the hospital, and he, like, flips out and goes on a killing spree and starts, like, killing nurses and doctors and everybody, making his way down to the morgue where Jason's body is, and then Jason's body was going to jump up and attack him. And then he was going to, you know, wake up. So I was like, that's a much different opening. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so it opens with Tommy walking in the woods in the rain. He comes up to Jason's grave looking. He looks terrified. And then suddenly we hear someone else coming up in the distance. So Tommy runs and hides. And we see two teens come up to the grave and they're talking about, you know, oh, this is where he is. This is where Jason is. Let's dig him up. And they start digging away. Now, was Jason, did his coffin just have some dirt kicked on it? Because it was like 3 inches deep.
Right. And those teenagers looked like they were 45.
Okay, you almost got my coffee spit out. And yes, they did.
I'm like, teenagers.
Oh, my God. But so, yeah, they uncover the coffin and pry it open. And we see we get a glimpse of worm-covered Jason. And suddenly he just pops up and stabs both of them. He gets one with a machete and one with an ice pick. Kills both of the kids, or teens, or 45-year-olds, or whatever they are.
The thing I find funny about this is when they come running up to the grave, they're like, yeah, we're going to dig him up. We're going to dig him up. And then they kick the soil away, and then they just look at him like, what are we going to do now?
Right, like, what was the plan?
And Jason's like, I'll tell you what I'm going to do now, bitch.
Right. Stabs both them fuckers. Then he climbs up out of his grave and turns toward Tommy. And Tommy just kind of stares at him in horror. And then Jason slowly walks at him. And I love the look on Corey Feldman's face because he's just got this, like, shocked look of horror. He's like, no, no. Like, he just looks so terrified. And then, Jason raises his machete. Tommy screams no. It kind of echoes off into the distance. And we get teenage Tommy waking up in the back of a van.
Wearing glasses. And that's the only scene I think he's wearing his glasses in.
You know what? I think you're right. I didn't even take notice of that. But now that you say
he wanted to see the scenery on his drive.
Yeah, exactly.
So he fell asleep.
Well, the scenery was pretty boring.
I mean,
what can I say?
Billy was looking at nudie magazines in the front seat, so.
Yeah, he was. How inappropriate was that?
That was pretty funny. Because it just, like, pans up front. You see there's, like, a gate between him and the driver and this orderly. And so it's, like, clearly he's, you know, in a secure van of some kind. And we see the one guy's like, hey, pipe down back there. He starts reading his nudie mag. It's like, dude, completely inappropriate. But it pans out, like the camera pans out and we see on the side of the van, Unger Institute of Mental Health. And then we cut to the title card. We see Friday the 13th and this flying hockey mask comes in and smashes through the title. And then it just says a new beginning. The camera pans or the mask pans to face like we're putting it on, like the viewer is putting on the mask. And we look out the eye hole and then we see the credits roll. So interesting opening credits. I mean, since part three, they've pretty much had interesting opening credits. So the but yeah, so we cut back to the movie. The van is approaching the Pinehurst Youth Development Center. And some big capital letters says private on this other sign. And then we just see a goat for some reason. So Black Phillip is there.
He wants those kids to live deliciously.
He really wanted Joey to live deliciously.
And I mean, I just call them nymphos gone wild. They were living deliciously, all right.
Oh, indeed, they were. So they drive in, and as they're driving by, all the different kids are kind of watching. They're like, oh, it must be the new kid. And then when they finally stop, Tommy doesn't want to get out of the van. And Billy's like, come on, get out of the van. He goes, oh, you're just going to sit there? Beautiful. Sit there. I don't give a shit. Just like, Billy was such a dick, but I loved him. And then we meet Pam Roberts. She comes out to greet Tommy, and she kind of coaxes him out of the van and says, like, you know, we got to go meet Matt, who's, I guess, was he a doctor? Is that what she said?
He was a doctor.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So he's, yeah, the doctor that runs the place. But as they walk away, Billy, being the creeper that he is like flicking his tongue at her. It's like, dude, you're just...
Yeah, what was that? What was that ear tongue thing? He's like, la, 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 la. Like, I get the tongue thing, but what does the ear do? Like, does he turn his ear when he's eating someone out?
No, he was saying that he wants to eat out the goat.
Oh.
Those were goat ears.
What?
I don't know.
Those were goat ears he was making. He wanted to eat out the goat.
Oh, okay. Well, then, this is a section of the internet I haven't visited, Maurice.
I looked up the biography of Billy from A New Beginning. And he was into that weird stuff.
He was into Rule 34.
Yes.
Oh, God.
I just figured he was tugging on his ear like a kid does when they're nervous.
And it made his tongue flap?
No, he was like, I want to do it, but I'm scared.
Oh, okay.
Oh, man. But anyway, so they go inside. Tommy isn't talking. They meet Matthew Letter. And, basically he's just, Tommy's not talking to him the whole time. They tell him to kind of go off to his room, check the place out. They explain how it's not a hospital. They're like, there's no guards here. We operate on an honor system. You're basically your own boss. And they're like, so go off to your room, check it out, see, you know, look around the place. And so Tommy's like, okay. And then he's like, he finally speaks and he walks away.
Because the doctor tells Pam, she says, point Tommy in the direction of his room. She's like, go through the kitchen and up the stairs. Why wouldn't this kid is coming from a mental institution?
Right.
Why wouldn't you take that extra step to try to make him feel a little more comfortable and let me show you to your room?
Right.
Instead, she's like, out, foul beast.
Yeah, I kind of took it as like he had just told him, like, there's no guards. They're like, you're your own person. And kind of almost like as a sign of his independence, like, OK, you're on your own. You go do this. But I get what you're saying.
Like, what if he walked in on Nymphos Go Wild?
Because
he went in the wrong room.
He may have had fun. You never know.
No. Well, knowing Tommy from this movie, he'd probably beat the shit out of him.
Yeah, both of them.
Unclean, and he would just start beating up.
He'd use dem titties as punching bags to knock them both out.
Oh, Lordy. So, Tommy leaves, and Matt and Pam are talking about his file. And Matt says he had severe trauma at age 12. So remember we were trying to figure out what age Tommy was in part four? Mm-hmm. Apparently he was
12.
And it says, because of a brutal self-defense murder of a psychopathic killer. And then he goes, boy, they've given him every treatment, every therapy they can think of. So it's like Tommy's been through a lot. That's like the only bit of backstory we get about his
time. Yeah,
institution.
They say that he should, his brain should be fried.
Yeah, exactly. So like he's been through quite a bit of treatment.
Now, how old is Tommy supposed to be in this movie? Because it takes place in 1989.
Right. So it's 89. The other one was 84. So
that's right. 19. That's right.
Yeah. No. Yes.
No. 17.
Yes.
Math.
Math no good.
The 5 years, he was 12. 17. I don't know where I got 19 from.
So yeah, so you'd be 17 here, and then I forget. We'll get to it in the next film, but in part six, I know more time has passed because part six is this is actually the first one that takes place technically in the future because this came out in what did I say, 85?
Yeah.
This came out in 85, and it takes place in 89. So going forward, all the movies from here on out take place in the future. So. Of the future of when they come out. So it's like, yes. Yeah, if that made sense. But anyway.
I have another question. So he's starting to unpack his stuff. How the fuck does he have a knife?
Right. I have
he's
that.
He's independent, his own man. He can have whatever he wants.
He is came, now.
Right. He came from a mental institution. So
yeah, I highly doubt Vic slipped it to him as he was walking out of the van. Well,
telling you from experience, I have an idea of where he put it.
That was a big knife.
Well.
Ooh, boy. He ain't sitting down for a while.
Oh, my God.
Why do you think he was sitting on his side on the butt, the right there?
Oh, God.
Oh, poor Tommy. He's been through a lot.
He was in a hospital, not prison.
Well, I was going to say, keep in mind, Maurice used to work in a hospital. He's seen some things.
They're not much different from prisons, from what I've gathered.
Oh, man. But yeah, so we cut to Tommy sitting in his bedroom, and he's looking at a picture of his mom, Trish, and their dog, Gordon. And, you know, he looks pretty bummed out. And, like, we that's it. We don't know what happened to Trish, like you said in the beginning. That's our only, you know, hint of the family from the fourth movie. And this is where I put it. I was like, how the fuck did he get a pocket knife? Because he pulls a pocket knife out. And it's a big friggin' pocket knife.
Right.
And he caresses it lovingly and then hides it under his mattress. And then he goes to unpack his stuff. He opens up his closet door, and boom, we get a rubber spider jump scare. Tommy jumps back, like, kind of huffing. He doesn't yell. He just makes, like, a loud, kind of, like, angry huff. And then we hear a kid laughing in the closet, and we meet Reggie the Reckless. He hops down off a shelf, and he goes, "You scared of spiders? You scared of rubber spiders? You scared of rubber spiders on a string? Man, you want scared cat." Tommy turns around, and he's got one of his homemade alien masks on, and he roars and scares the crap out of Reggie. Reggie's like, "It was a joke, man. It was a joke." And then we see Tommy unpacks more of his masks, and, you know, Reggie goes to grab one. And now we, you know, Tommy talks for the first time. He's like, you know, "No, don't." And he goes, "You act like you made these things." And he goes, "I did." And he goes, "Oh, wow. Solid." Like, so he likes now, like, we get a little bit of, like, Reggie and Tommy kind of trust each other, and they're starting to talk here. We find out that Reggie he's not one of the residents there, that his grandfather works there, and he's just kind of visiting. And then we hear sirens outside, so Reggie takes off to see what all the hubbub is about. And when the cops show up, they come up with the nymphos, as you said. And
nymphos go wild.
Right. They're like, "We picked up these kids humping on the neighbor's property. Now, it's a good thing Ethel wasn't home." And it's like he fucking summoned her, because she comes riding in with Junior on a motorcycle. They both look like they fucking took a dirt bath. Like,
she's like, "Sheriff?"
I love it, because she hops off and she starts demanding to the sheriff. She goes, "Now you shut this camp down, Sheriff. I want it all shut down. You hear me?" And the Junior goes, "You tell him, Ma." She goes, "You don't think I know what these two perverts were doing in my yard?" He goes, "Say it like you mean it, Ma." And she goes, "Would you shut the fuck up?" And then she goes,
the next little bastard comes near my farm, I'm going to blow your fucking brains out. You hear me?
And then the sheriff walks toward her and she's like, don't you touch me.
Yeah.
I got a bomb on me. I'll blow the whole place up. Like, if she said that now,
right,
they'd be on top of her like white on rice.
They'd shoot her in the knees.
Yes.
But yeah, she warns him about blowing him up and she backs away to the motorcycle. She's like, Junior, start the engine. Start the engine. She hops on and she goes, that's my final word. And she flips them all off as they drive away. Oh my God. Like, a lot of Friday the 13th have those ridiculous characters.
Yes.
You know, whether it be a Ralph.
Is she the Ralph of this movie?
Kind of.
You're not doomed, but, you know, you're doomed if you come on my property.
Right. Like, I would put her and Junior in the Ralph category, because I feel like every Friday the 13th has to have that one really weird character ever since part two. Or, well, I mean, Ralph was in part one, but he wasn't as weird as he was in part. We didn't have, we did. We had Crazy in the Cupboard in part one. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Ralph. Okay. So ever since part one. So yeah, we had Ralph in one and two. We had the bum sleeping in the eyeball bum sleeping in the street in part three. He's like, he gave it to me. And he's holding up the eye. And who did we have in part four? We had to have someone crazy in part four.
The drunk gravekeeper, right?
No, that's part six.
Oh, yeah, that's part six.
I'm trying to think. There had to be someone in part four. I don't know who would count as part four.
I don't think there was anyone in part four.
I don't think there was either.
Oh, well, shit. There goes this whole theory. But, I mean, you know, we got Ethel and Junior in this, and then we got the gravekeeper in part six. And, I don't know if we got one in part seven either. So, okay, most of the Friday the 13th movies have this weirdo.
It depends on what town they're in.
Yes.
Right.
But, so they take off. Now, the sheriff talks to Matt about Tommy Jarvis. He's just kind of curious about him. He goes, you know, I heard you guys got Tommy Jarvis here. And he's like, yeah. He goes, well, what's he like? He goes, well, the kid's been through a lot. And he goes, yeah, I bet. And then he's like, all right, Matt, you have a good one. He takes off. So now we kind of get a hint that the sheriff is wondering if something is up with Tommy. Again, we get all these little hints pointing toward Tommy that something's wrong. Now, we cut to Vic chopping wood.
That's what we should be worried about.
He doesn't look like a teenager either. He looks like he's 45.
Mm-hmm. That's Mark Venturini. That's suicide. He, he's chopping wood angrily. We see Joey come out of the house, eating his chocolate bar, and he sees Robin and
Violet.
Yeah, he sees them hanging up laundry, and I feel kind of bad. He goes over, he's talking about how good he is at laundry, and he wants to help, and he's like, you know, oh, I'll gladly help out. He goes, look, I'll help you. And he reaches down and he picks up the clean laundry and he's got them damn chocolate fingers. He gets chocolate smears all over the clean laundry. And then they freak out on him. They're like, oh, get out of here, Joey. Get out of here. You know, because, yeah, he just fucking made more work for him. In spite, like, the poor guy was trying to help, but yeah, he fucked up. So he's like, all right, fine. He goes, if you need my help, let me know. And he walks away and he goes over to Vic. And Vic is doing his best impression of of Bozo from Toxic Avenger.
Dick. Oh my God. Yes. That guy.
That fucking guy.
Before we go on, I looked it up. Victor was 24 in real life when this movie came out.
I want to say he passed in his 30s.
He was 35. He died in 96.
Because I remember. Because this and Return of the Living Dead came out in the same year. They both came out in 85. And like I said, he was getting a lot of work at the time. And then he got sick. And it's just, that's such a bummer. Because, you know, one of those, like, what could have been type of things. But actually, it's funny. Like, this, the next movie, we have another Return of the Living Dead alum with, was it Tom Matthews? The guy who played Freddy in Return of the Living Dead. He plays Tommy Jarvis. Mm-hmm. So, it's interesting how many ties to Friday the 13th there are with the Return of the Living Dead movie. So, yeah, he goes over to Vic, and he starts telling him a little bit about how much he loves it there. He's like, you know, oh, I really love it here. He's like, you know, being an orphan, I've moved around from home to home. He's like, but I really feel like I belong here. And he's going on. And it's like, you kind of feel bad for the guy. Like, yeah, he's awkward, but, you know, he seems like a sweet kid.
And but then, I want you to stop and think about if you had to live with that person.
Oh, yeah. No doubt. It would be annoying as hell. No doubt. But it's like, you know, it's still not worth what happens to him.
I mean, I'm not saying that he deserved to get an axe to the head. And but I mean, Vic said no. Like, he should, no means no. He didn't respect boundaries.
And that's the thing. Vic said he hates it there. And he goes, well, can I help you chop wood? It looks like a lot of fun. I've never done it before. And he just goes, get the fuck away from me.
And doesn't he set the he goes, I got two chocolate bars, Vic, two.
Yeah.
Don't tell the girls.
And I'm going to give you one.
And he sets it down, and Vic chops it in half. And he's like, well, fine. If that's what you think about it, forget it.
Just forget. But I think you're really out of line. Yeah. And then that's when Vic is like, the fucking guy! And he just starts chopping Joey in the back. And it's like, poor Joey just gets a hatchet to the back. And Vic is flipping shit. Like, he just looks insane at that point. You hear the scream. Everyone, you know, the girls scream. You see Matt jump in the window and like, oh my god. And then we cut to this really cool tracking shot of, it's the ambulance siren. And it's like the camera is sitting right behind the siren. And it's like driving into the camp. So we see like all the people like moving out of the way and all that, the clearly chaos. As they arrive, we pass by Vic in the back of the sheriff's car. So it's still looking nuttier than fuck. Like, the dude just looks crazy as hell in that image. So we see the two medics get out, and there's the blood covered sheet. And the one medic, he just looks like a fucking dick. He's got his sunglasses on. He's chomping on some gum.
He's blowing bubbles with the bubble gum. That's so disrespectful to the dead.
Right?
Like, no, I mean, not really, but he's just a fucking douche nozzle.
Well, that's fucking what I'm saying, like, pussies.
Yeah, exactly. He looks around because all the kids are like freaking out, and he goes, bunch of pussies. And then he pulls back the sheet, and we see Roy's reaction. Roy looks horrified, and we see Joey's bloody corpse with his fucking severed arm laying on his back.
I've seen this movie so many times, and it wasn't until yesterday that I actually realized his arm is like was severed.
Right.
I just thought he was like contorted where he fell, but no, yesterday I definitely watching something critically, I tell you.
They piled up the limbs.
easier to clean up. Just make one trip.
Well, that's the thing I was questioning. I'm like, okay, did the cops pile up the limbs? Like, because the medics weren't there yet.
Right. Or did the other kids have to do it?
Right. They're like, stack it like firewood now. Just get it all together.
We all have our jobs to do around here to earn our keep.
Oh, that's terrible. But so the kids start, they're freaking out and crying. You know, the medic looks at Roy and he goes, come on, Roy, get your hands dirty. And like I said, we get that shot of Roy looking shocked. And when he says, come on, Roy, get your hands dirty, he like snaps to look at the other medic and he looks pissed. And so this is the first hint of something is wrong with Roy. Now we cut from that scene, smash cut from dead Joey to greasers in the woods.
Also, we forgot to mention that Tommy is watching all of this unfold through his bedroom window.
Ah, yes, that is true.
Without his glasses on.
Yeah, because for some reason he only needed to see it in when something was moving.
That's right. Dead bodies, he can see those.
Oh, yeah, he can see them just fine. So we get these greasers in the woods, and they're just literally fodder one, fodder two. The car's broken down. The one greaser behind the wheel, he's like, you got to fix this car. He's yelling at the other guy. And he's like, I'm sick of fixing everything. Just arguing back and forth.
Pete and Vinny. And Pete's the one. He's like, come on. These cunts ain't going to wait all night.
Yeah. And then he goes, I got to take a crack. Yeah.
Without toilet paper.
Right. There's two times in this movie someone takes a shit and doesn't wipe.
Mud butt. call back to Friday the 13th part 3.
I don't think those cunts want to be with him if he has mud butt.
I mean, maybe they're into freaky shit.
Oh, literally.
Literally.
So
deep,
he's like,
deep shit.
He goes, I gotta take a crap. And then the other guy watches him and he goes, crap my ass. And I'm like, wait, that's a terrible line.
Yeah.
So I just wrote, Dumper goes looking for a spot to dump. And he suddenly hears twigs snapping behind him. And we get a bunny scare. Oh my God. It's like a little fucking rabbit jumps out.
I was scared.
No, we cut back to I don't remember which one is which.
Vinny.
Is it Vinny? Okay.
Pete's the crapper.
Okay. I was just like, you know, fodder one, fodder two. But so we cut back to Vinny. He's trying to fix the car. And we see someone kind of walks up, like, out of frame and pops a flare. So now Vinny can't see who it is, and he thinks that it's Pete. And he's like, Pete, is that you? And then suddenly the flare gets jammed in his mouth, which is a great death scene.
You know, death by road flare.
And that's like, I mean, I know the Friday the 13th movies are known for inventive killing, but like, that's a new one. I have never seen that repeated in another film. So
that's because the real Jason didn't do it. It had to be someone.
That's a valid point.
Yeah, he had to get creative because he didn't have that crazy Jason strength. So yeah, we cut back to Pete coming back from taking a dump. He hops in the car singing a little jingle about how the car better be working.
And he scats.
Yeah.
While he's beating up the steering wheel. Yep, tick, tick, tick. Come on, dummy. Start the car. It ain't starting. Start the car. Puff. That's what Roy just hated his singing. That's why he cut his throat to shut him the fuck up.
He deserved to die because if you think about it, his friend was slumped over the car for all he knew, fixing it. But he was slumped over the hood of the car, like clearly in the engine. Like he had his hands down in there. And motherfucker jumps in the car and starts trying to turn it on. Like, you didn't ask, are you clear? Are you got your hands out of there? He's just turning it on. Like, come on, why isn't it working? It's like, you fucking dick. But so yeah, we see somebody reach from behind in the back seat and slice his throat. So bye bye, Dumper. So then we cut to
Tommy, right?
Yep, we cut to Tommy freaking out in his room. And this is the first time we see him like hallucinating. Because he starts hearing his younger self screaming, you know, die, die, die from part four. And then you hear Trish going, Tommy, no. that stretched out slow-mo voice. And he goes, jumps up from his bed to go take his pills. And as he's taking them, he sees Jason standing behind him holding a bloody axe. He freaks out. He turns around. Obviously, there's no one there. He looks back in the mirror. No Jason. So Tommy closes his eyes. He starts to cry. So this is, again, we saw deaths. Like, as Maurice pointed out, we saw some characters die, and then we cut back to Tommy. Now we cut to the dining room downstairs, and Reggie is talking to his grandfather.
At breakfast.
Yep. Well, the other kids are setting the table. And I love this because how casually the kid is like, I want to go see my brother Demon. And it's like, wait, his name is Demon?
Yeah.
It just seemed pretty funny to me. And Gramps doesn't think that's the best idea. Reggie gets all pissed off and sulks. Gramps kind of laughs and calls him back over, and he hugs him and kisses him on the forehead. And then Reggie looks all embarrassed. He goes, don't kiss me when there's people around. And Gramps looks around nervous. He's like, all right, man, it's cool. It's cool. Mm. And I'm like, oh, man, I'm not looking forward to that period of Caleb's life where he's like, no, I don't want to show affection to my parents. Like, that's going to make me bummed. But anyway, so he goes, go tell everyone breakfast is ready. And Reggie just sticks his head out the door and goes, yo, breakfast!
And then sits down.
And Gramps is like, I could have done that.
So then the other kids start trickling in, and Robin and Vi are in the, I keep wanting to call it a mess hall, in the dining room. Mm-hmm. And Jake sits down, and he's like, there's too many places set. And yeah. Vi's like, no. And then Gramps is like, I don't think that Joey or Vic will be joining us today.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow.
And then she gets all upset. And
they get over things fast, sir.
Gramps was just like, ah, they were both crazy, whatever. but all the kids get mad at Violet for setting out the plates. He's like, you don't set a place for a dead guy. You know, that's when Jake was flipping out on her. And so we see Matt come in. And, like, everyone starts trickling in except for Eddie. And Matt turns to Tina and asks. Well, no, he turns to Tina and asks, where's Eddie? And she goes, I don't know, he's upstairs. As Tommy comes in, he goes, Tommy, will you go upstairs and get Eddie? And Tommy, like, stands there and he's like, okay. He reluctantly, he's like, I'm going to go. And as soon
Eddie,
as...
Eddie must be cleaning up again.
What's that?
He must be cleaning up again.
Oh, I love that moment. So... He turns to go out of the dining room, and here comes Eddie, jumps in wearing one of Tommy's masks, his werewolf mask. And again, Tommy jumps back, and then Eddie peels off the mask, and he starts punching Tommy in the arm. He goes, relax, chief. Where's your sense of humor? Can't you take a joke? Huh? 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 Like, I wanted to hit him.
And then Tommy knocks him the fuck out.
He doesn't just knock him out. He picks his ass up, spins him around, and body slams his ass through a table.
Mm-hmm.
And then he starts whooping the shit out of him.
Yep.
And a Matt jumps up and, like, pins Tommy to the wall, which, you know, stops Tommy. Tommy takes a deep breath and kind of, like, comes back to reality. So we kind of get a hint that when Tommy loses his shit, he's not in control anymore. Like, he's just going to whoop whatever is bothering him. So... Now we cut to Ethel chopping some chicken.
Hiya!
And she's comparing it. She goes, I'm going to chop you up into itty bitty pieces, just like they did to that piggo at the crazy camp. It's like, oh my God. And then she does the sound that you just made, Susie, which, what was that again?
Hiya!
And then Junior does it. And yeah, then she says, you big dildo, eat your fucking slop.
He's like, I'm eating my fucking slop, mama.
Who calls her son a dildo?
Ethel does. Oh,
that cracked me the fuck up.
Maybe she calls him a dildo because when she looks at him, she wishes that's what she would have used that night.
Yeah. Oh, man. So she hears some noises outside and grabs her gun thinking it's a coyote. So she goes running to the door, and she finds some random filthy hobo.
What is the point of him?
Fodder. Yeah, just fodder and more red fodder.
Yeah,
well, just another body.
Just to give you someone else you can accuse, I guess.
Yeah,
not long.
Exactly, but he's another red herring because it's like, oh, there's this random drifter. I wonder if he's the killer. You know, because what is he doing there? But
he's looking for food. He's looking for some of that fucking slop.
Well, yeah, because he tells her that he it's been 2 days since he's last eaten, and he'd like to earn a meal. He's like, you know, I'll do whatever work you need, whatever work needs doing, I'll do it. And she goes, she's like, all right, go clean out all the shit, or the chicken shit, the chicken coop, and was it said, dump it in the river out back or something like that.
Dump it behind the shed, and then I'll fill your belly. And he's like, yes, ma'am.
Yeah, so he goes, and then. Oh, God.
Then she says, that's one ugly man.
She puts away her gun, and Junior just kind of watches her dopily. And she's like, that is one fucking ugly man that goes there. And he goes, that's one fucking ugly man, mama. She goes, would you shut your trap? You ain't so pretty yourself, you know? And he goes, I know I ain't so pretty myself. I know.
While he's eating it, she goes, there's something about the stew, the slop that he's eaten. She's like, don't you just love my stew? And he says something like, best stew ever, mama.
Yep. I love it, though, because when he's like, I know I ain't so pretty myself, mama. He starts chuckling and goes back to eating. And she looks like she's going to choke him. Like, she's holding her hands up and she goes, you, ooh. It makes all these, like, cartoon sounds.
And then she does her,
hi-ya! Right. Yep, she walks back over to the chicken, and instead of the neck, she chops one of the legs.
There's such cartoon characters, I swear.
Oh, yeah.
But then we cut back to the dead greasers, and the cops are all around. And the one cop goes, he's like, what the hell's going on here? And Roy is the only other person in frame, and he turns and faces the camera, and he goes, you talking to me, Sheriff? He goes, what? He goes, oh, I thought you were talking to me. Oh, no, Roy, it's okay. Go ahead and get out of here. And then the other guy goes, looks like we've got a maniac on the loose here, Sheriff. And he goes, yep. And then we do a zoom in on Roy, and it's like, wah, wah. Like, if you didn't know what was going on, that telegraphed it pretty damn well. So now we cut to Billy speeding into a parking lot of a small diner, honking and calling for Lana to come out. And Lana, the waitress, comes running out, and she goes, you're a little too late. We're closed. He goes, that's okay. I want a to-go order. She goes, what do you want? And he goes, I want Lana to go with nothing on her. And she's like, you know, she kind of pretends like she's talking to Lana in the background. And she's like, okay, well, you have to wait until she's ready. And so he starts hooting and hollering, and she goes inside, goes in the bathroom. And I don't get this part. Don't get me wrong, it's fine, but I just don't get it. She goes into the bathroom, makes kissy faces at herself, and goes, it's showtime, and just rips her shirt open.
And like, dem titties.
Right. I was like, hey, look at that. Just for no reason. I mean, I ain't complaining, but come on.
It's and then she weird. Leaves her uniform at work, hanging on the back of the bathroom door.
Right.
Like doesn't she wash it?
Mm-mm. She just leaves it to get stankier and stankier. So now we cut back to Billy in the car, and he goes to do some coke because it was the 80s. And he goes, the forecast is cloudy in the mountains, sunny in the valley, and snow flurries up your nose. And he goes, whoo.
All the while, there is this like quintessential 80s, just like generic rock music playing in his beat up whatever car it is he has.
Oh my God. This whole sequence is so ridiculous. Again, it was literally a fodder sequence. That's all it was. It was just so we could get some more kills. But we cut back to Lana, and she sprays Banaka on her tits. I fucking lost it because she sprays it in her mouth first, and then she sprays it on her tits, and she goes, woo! Like, like, ooh, minty.
Well, she wants them to be minty fresh.
Minty fresh titties.
She's been waiting tables in a skanky ass unwashed waitress's uniform.
True.
She better make them smell minty fresh, because I bet they ooh. And I bet they don't sell a lot of her pie there if it's so stinky too.
They smell like grease and desperation.
Yep.
Oh man. So now she hears something break in the diner, and she calls out for Billy, thinking it's him. And then we get the cat jump scare.
Who the fuck throws a cat?
No, because that cat was definitely thrown.
Yeah, that cat didn't jump. That was that someone hurled that cat.
It's like grip number two, just hucked the cat through the frame.
It was Roy.
Well, yeah, it might have been. Because we cut back to Billy outside, and he's getting impatient. He opens the car door and sticks his head out and yells for Lana. And then we get an axe to the bald spot.
Yep.
Which
bye, Billy.
I laughed so hard because it's like he aimed right for the bald.
No snow for you.
Nope. So now we cut to the cat in the diner, and Lana scoops him up, and she's like, oh, you're such a bad kitty. And she takes him outside and like sets him down. He scurries off, and she runs and gets in Billy's car. And then she immediately starts complaining about how it's cold and that he's not there. And she's like, okay.
Billy. Come on, Billy, it's cold. And then she sees the spilled coke.
Yeah.
Oh, well, if you're going to waste it, I'm going to make it useful.
Yeah, she's like, you're going to waste a lot of money like that. She goes, oh, well, more for me. And as she goes to, she's like leaning over to pick it up. She sees out of the open door, the open driver's side door, she sees the bloody boots and the axe of, you know, the killer. And she starts freaking out, and she goes to back out of the passenger door, and she turns around and she gets an axe to the gut, and then it pans out and we see her just laying in the parking lot with an axe sticking up out of her gut.
Oh, no snow in the forecast for those two.
Right. So, of course, we cut back to Tommy, and he's watching some chickens from his room for some reason, and then we get... We get the what do you call them, the nympho teens or
nymphos go wild.
We get the nymphos go wild running past the scene like whoop 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 whoop. And then suddenly we see Jason doing his best Michael Myers impression, just standing in the yard looking up at Tommy.
Yep.
And he closes his eyes and, you know, Jason disappears. Tommy looks disturbed. So now we cut to the stereotypical angry mayor in the sheriff's office complaining to the sheriff about the killings. He's like, we got to do something about this, sheriff. We got to stop these killings from happening. He's just like flipping shit. And he goes, you need to find out who's doing all this. And sheriff goes, he says, you know, he knows who's killing him. And he goes, who? And he goes, it's Jason Voorhees. And he goes, Jason Voorhees is dead. And I just wrote, I wanted him so bad to say D-E-D dead. Because the way he was talking. And he goes, he was cremated. And then that's when the sheriff jumps up and he goes, how do you know, mayor? Were you there? Did you see the body? And the mayor picks up his ashtray and he dumps out the ashes. He goes, there's your Jason Voorhees. It's a pile of ashes. He goes, now you find out who's doing all this. And he walks out of the office. And I wrote, now we cut to Tits McGee, I mean Tina, doing laundry. And Eddie jumps out and scares her. And he gets all gropey with her. And she's like, no, Matt will kill us. And he goes, fuck Matt. She goes, fuck you. And he goes, yeah, fuck me. And then they run away giggling into the woods.
And it's like, he just goes, yeah, fuck me. And she's like, oh, yes. And then they take the clean sheets that she's trying to hang up.
Mm-hmm. And then they just, and I'm sorry, like, you know, maybe it's just because I'm old, but they just laid that down in the dirt with rocks and sticks underneath them. I don't want to lay on that. That's going to hurt.
Like, right.
You're getting poked in places you don't want to be poked.
Right. Like, and I know what you did last summer. Her first time, she got sand up her vajayjay.
The old sandy vag.
Yeah. It's like the Sahara Desert in there.
So now we see them in the woods, and then Eddie breaks out a joint and they start sharing it while they're getting undressed. And we see someone watching from the bushes. And of course, we think it's Jason, but nope, it's the creepy old drifter. And then we cut back to the two of them, like, getting down on the blanket. We get our first Dem Titties moment of the scene. And then we cut back to the drifter. He hears something behind him. He turns, machete to the gut. And then when we cut back to Eddie and Tina, he's already done. He goes, I used to go wash up. And I went, wait a second. Let me rewind this. I timed it. They got naked at 43 minutes and 32 seconds. He was done at 43 minutes and 59 seconds. 27 seconds.
Do you know why, though?
Yes, because they edited down the scene.
Right. They had, I think I read they had to do 6 trips to the MPAA to get an R rating because they said it was too gory and too sexual.
Yeah, they said there was a lot of sex or a lot of like nudity scenes they actually just cut out of the film altogether.
Right.
But I did have to laugh because I'm like, man, they made him look really bad.
And like, what is he washing up from? Did he like spray his own jizz on his chest? Because he pulled his pants on and went down. And the next time we see him, he's down by the babbling brook. Like, is he washing the cum off of his chest?
I think he just jumped in.
Or was she a squirter? Like, was he cleaning himself?
He's like, I gotta go wash your filth off of me.
She's like, but baby, you like golden showers.
He's like, when he says I should go wash up, she's like, okay. And he runs off and she just lays back down on the blanket. And this is a long sequence. So it's funny, like, they cut the sex scene but left this, like, you know, 30-second clip of her, just like the camera panning around, you know, naked Tina laying in the woods.
Stretching and sighing, trying to stretch out that last bit of her O. And then she just falls asleep. No cuddle time. She is an inconsiderate lover.
No, she doesn't fall asleep. She closes her eyes and she makes the, like, kind of sound. And then she hears something and opens her eyes. And that's when
it's Cropsy.
Yeah, that's what I wrote. I wrote, we have a Cropsy cameo because we get the shears. We see him come down. We don't see what happens yet. We just see the shears come down, and then we see the hands push him closed, and we hear the schlunk kind of sound. And it's just like, oh, that freaked me out so bad as a kid. Like, yeah, I probably shouldn't have been watching this movie as a kid anyway, but that scene really freaked me out. Because it went from, like, ooh, Dem Titties, to, oh, God, no, like, really quick. But we cut to Eddie. I wrote, cut to Eddie having washed the sin off of him. And he skips. And he grabs a stick and starts pretending to be a pirate or something, because he's like, yah, yar, and slashing at the bushes. And then he goes back, he finds Tina laying on the blanket, and he's like, oh, come on, wake up. And he goes and he rolls her over, and we see that the shears were stabbed into her eyes and, like, cut the bridge of her nose. Like, that freaked me out when we saw what happened. And then he freaks out, backs up against a tree, and this is where we get the death scene you were talking about, Reese. We get the leather strap around his eyes, and we see the person on the other side of the tree put a stick, like, through the little leather loops, and they start twisting it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's such a painful sounding scene, because, like, we get one shot of Eddie with, like, blood coming out from under the straps, and he's screaming, and then we cut back to just the hands twisting the leather belt, twisting, twisting, until finally you hear a crunch. It's like, oh, that's a horrible way to go.
I mean, yeah. But yep. Now neither of them can see no evil.
True. True.
So remember a couple episodes ago, I said, you know, Jason is just trying to return to the, you know, the simpler times that he knew. Mm-hmm. So Roy is kind of a hybrid of that. So we're the greasers, they don't belong in that era in 1989. So that's why they had to get done with.
Right.
So he doesn't like drugs. That's why Billy and Lana had to die.
Mm-hmm.
He killed the weird drifter because he was doing dirty things by watching people have sex. And then the kids are just as guilty because they're fornicating outside of the marriage bed, out in broad daylight.
Out for God and everyone else to see.
He probably thinks maybe if they wouldn't have been off fucking somewhere, his Joey would still be alive, even though he didn't even know him as a father.
True. Even though it didn't happen yet, what did Violet do?
We'll get to it.
Yep. She was addicted to music. There you go. She had an addiction. But yeah, so now we cut to Reggie sitting in a truck waiting for Pam. And we see Pam and Matt talking about how Pam is going to be taking Reggie to go see his brother. And Matt is very worried about Eddie and Tina because they haven't shown up yet. When he says that, we pan over and we see Tommy kind of just standing by the tree off by himself. And then Pam goes, she's like, well, you know, they'll come back whenever they're hungry. Don't worry about it. And Matt goes, why don't you take Tommy with you? You know, I think, you know, the little socialization will do him some good. So she convinces Tommy to come with them to go see Demon, Reggie's brother.
The way he's just standing there under the tree, I thought of that scene in Spaceballs where Princess Vespa is singing, nobody knows. The trouble I seen. and Pam just comes up and she's like, come on, little guy. Let's get out of here. And he's like, oh, shucks, okay.
Well, he noticed she wasn't wearing a bra, so he was like, okay.
He's like, can I sit, bitch? Get a little elbow rub on that.
Oh, man. So they take off, and I love this sequence, because this is the first of a few scenes where we get just several shots of the truck driving, like, completely normal scene. The truck is just driving, but it's playing the ominous Jason chase music. Like, when Jason is chasing someone, it's playing that music, and I'm going, wait, why? What's happening here? Mm. And then they arrive in a van, and I couldn't stop laughing. Because I'm like, there's this ominous Jason music, and then their destination is a van
at the trailer park, which the sign looks like it's for a seedy motel.
Oh my god, it so did. And so they run up to the van, and Reggie excitedly knocks on the van doors, and Demon, we meet Demon for the first time. He swings the doors open. And he's like, oh, my God, get in here. And they hug, you know, have nice brotherly embrace. And he's like, you hungry? You want an enchilada? Here, have an enchilada. Like, he's trying to give him enchiladas.
He's like a grandma at this point. Did you eat? You didn't eat. You clearly didn't eat yet.
Oh, Demon, the little Italian grandma. so Reggie's eyeballing the rings on Demon's fingers, and he goes, "Where'd you get them rings from?" And he goes, "When you've been around the world as long as me, little man, you get things." And then he turns and sees something off camera, and he goes, "Where'd you get that from?" And then we pan over, we see it's Anita, his girlfriend. I'm like, oh, she's a that, is she?
Smoking a joint.
And she's like, "Hey, little man." And Demon tells him that's his girlfriend, Anita. And Reggie goes, "I want you to meet my girlfriend." He calls Pam over. And he says, you know, how it's his girlfriend. And Pam just plays along. She's like, "Oh, whatever." And, you know, Demon's like, "Hello, Pam."
Because when Reggie says hi to Anita, he's like, "Hey, baby." And he does, like, that smile and, like, the little eye flutter, which I thought was so adorable.
It really was. But, so we cut to Tommy standing outside underneath the trailer park sign. And he's just kind of, like, watching it hiss and buzz. And he just looks crazy.
Because Pam wanted him to come with them to meet Demon. And he was like, "I don't want an enchilada. I'm okay here.
I'm sorry, I don't eat van food."
He's like, "I've heard what those enchiladas can do to your innards."
So we get a little interlude. We cut back and Demon gives Reggie one of his rings. And he's like, "Oh, man, are you sure?" And he goes, "Nothing's too good for my little brother." And he goes, "Can I have that?" And he goes, "Get out of here." He's trying to get more of his shit. And then we cut back to Tommy again, like, staring at the sign. And then someone comes flying up on a motorcycle. All we see is the headlight. Scares the crap out of Tommy. He jumps back. He sees it's Junior, who thinks he's fucking hilarious. Like, he gets off the bike and he's just laughing his ass off. And he's like, "I scared you good, didn't I, buddy? I scared you." And then he sees the pickup truck. And he realizes that Tommy is from Pinehurst, and he freaks out. He goes, "You're a crazy from the loony bin. My mama's going to cut you up into itty-bitty pieces, my friend. You hearing me? Huh? You hearing me?" And he goes, "Fuck you, lunatic." And he goes to punch him. Tommy fucking dodges it and starts ninja kicking the crap out of him.
Exactly. First of all, who let Junior out at night unsupervised? Exactly. I don't think that he should have any unsupervised time outside of the house. Probably inside of the house either.
Oh, God, Lord only knows what he would do.
Because I really think that his daddy was also his uncle, brother, cousin.
You're not wrong. Oh, man. So, yeah, he's beating the shit out of Junior. And then Pam comes running up to break it up. Tommy freaks out, realizing, you know, what he did, and then he runs off all dramatically into the night. He's like,
I know it's not how he does it, but I, like, in my head, now that we're talking about it, I picture him running like a frantic woman, like, arms flailing, like, "I just gotta go!"
That's exactly it. Oh my God, that's exactly what I pictured when he did that.
And then Pam, this is like, if it really feels like they've only been there for 10 minutes.
Right. Because
then Pam's like, "All right, Reggie, we have to leave right now." And he's like, "Okay."
Right. He's been talking about seeing his brother for like 2 days. And yeah, he gets a 10-minute little visit.
A ring and an enchilada.
It's like a carnival. Right. So I love it because they leave. They go looking for Tommy. And then we get Demon and Anita sharing a joint. And Demon just goes, "Oh." And she goes, "You all right?" And he goes, "Yeah, yeah. Oh." When he goes, "It's them damn enchiladas." And he gets up and starts
to the outhouse. And he doesn't even knock. There could have been someone else on the crapper. He would have just dropped trout and shat on their lap.
But I love it because he was totally doing the poop scurry. Like, his cheeks were squeezed and his legs were, they were not moving above the knees. Like, it was all, that run was just knee down. Like, it was like, just that little run. He gets to the shitter and he's just like, he starts crapping. He's like, like this moan. And then suddenly the entire crapper starts shaking and he's freaking out. And we cut out to outside to Anita, and she's shaking it. I just wrote, "Oh, that Anita." And he goes, "You're gonna get it, bitch."
Like, he changed so fast. Like, "You're gonna get it, bitch." And she's like, "Oh, calm down." And then she's like, "Hey, baby. Hey, baby."
Well, right before that, she goes, oh, lighten up, demon. You'll feel better after you shit.
Yes, yes. Now, the uncomfortable thing about this is I have this habit of I'll start talking to Shane if he's, like, walking past me. I'm in the living room or something. And then he'll go in the bathroom and shut the door. I'll continue talking. And when he comes out, he's like, that isn't the time to talk to me. And I'm like, okay, but I still do it. It's just, it's a habit I'm never going to break. So every time I watch this movie and that scene, I'm like, this is not the time to be talking, let alone serenading each other.
They were doing a call and response song.
Right.
Oh my God. But so he's singing back and forth with her, the Ooh Baby song.
And he's doing like the little shoulder shimmy a little bit. Like, does that help the poop all come out if you do the shoulder shimmy?
He was working the turds out. So then, like, she goes quiet, and we cut outside, and we don't see her anymore. We cut back inside, and the whole thing starts shaking again.
And he is livid. He's like, now you're gonna get it, bitch!
But he hoists up his drawers without without wiping.
My butt.
He goes, I told you this isn't funny. Now you're gonna get it, bitch. And the way he was saying it, like every time he said, you're gonna get it, bitch, he was like, you're gonna get it, bitch. Like it was all very clip.
Yes.
So he goes to swing the door open and it hits something. He looks down and it's dead Anita blocking the door. He freaks out, jumps back into the shitter. And then we get this spiked pole come flying through the wall. He dodges it and starts screaming. And then... This always freaked me out because it looks so damn painful. He jumps up, like, tries to, like, kind of stand on top of the toilet, and the pole comes back through and, like, stabs him in the kneecap. Like, from the side. It looks like it just took his kneecap.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, God, that looks so painful. And then he falls down crying and screaming, and then he gets the pole comes through his back and out of his gut. I was like, well, bye-bye, demon.
He's like, oh, baby.
Baby.
He's like, you gonna get it, bitch.
Meanwhile, back at Ethel and Junior's. Well, Ethel is... Wait, doesn't it cut right to them?
No. It cuts to Pam and Reggie getting back to Pinehurst.
Oh, that's right.
Jake, Robin, and Violet come running out. And they're like, you know, Matt went looking for Eddie and Tina. And then Reggie goes, where's Gramps? And they're like, we don't know. He's not around either. So Pam is like, okay, Jake, you're in charge. She goes, get Reggie to bed, and I'm going to go look for everybody. So she takes off. And now we cut to, go ahead.
Where Ethel is just talking to herself and cutting up, making her stew. And then we hear, first of all, it's looks like it's late at night. You know, this is summer and it's already dark. So it's got to be like around 9:30. She's making stew for Junior to eat for dinner, and that stew looks fucking disgusting.
Yes, it does.
Like, I would not feed that to my worst enemy, to my arch nemesis, and I do have one. And then Junior comes rolling up, and he's like, Ma! They hurt me real bad, Ma! And he just keeps screaming, and she's like, well, you shut the fuck up! And he's just driving around their little farm area driveway thingy, that's a technical term, screaming, they hurt me bad, Ma! And then finally he lost his head over it. He got so upset. Wah wah.
Oh, I love it, because he was hopping his little dirt bike, motorcycle, whatever it is, up onto the porch and then, like, jumping down off of it. And, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. We see Junior on the bike when it's in close-up, but then when we see him, like, doing these little stunts, in quotes, jumping up on the porch, it looks like a totally different dude.
It is. It totally is. It wasn't in the budget to make the stuntman. Maybe it was Junior the Third.
We broke Susie.
Okay. All right, I think I'm okay.
Ethel's yelling at him, quiet down. I'm making your slop. And she horks a loogie into the pot. I'm like, that's fucking disgusting. And then, you know, he's going, bah! And he's screaming. And then you just see an arm holding a cleaver come up from behind a tree.
And then you see and he drives right into it.
And you see Junior's head just roll across the yard.
Mouth that, still agape.
Right. And then Ethel is stirring the pot with her fucking hand. Like a damn animal. She's just stirring it with her hand. I'm like, oh, come on. She pulls her hand out and just shakes gunk off of it. And then she's talking about how, says something about like, no one makes stew as good as me. And she looks up and you see a cleaver come through the window and whack her in the face. And then she falls headfirst into the pot of stew.
While she squeezes the tomato with her dying breath.
Yes. She squishes that tomato. And they really held that shot too.
Yes. Just that part really grosses me out. And at the Joey and the chocolate bars, that mm-hmm. just really makes me sick.
You know, there's, I think we discussed this a little bit in the Toxic Avenger, but there is something about like food in horror movies is often like extra gross for some reason. It was like the scene where Toxie is eating all the fucking eggs.
Yes.
And it's just like, it turns my stomach every fucking time. But this very much, I'm right there with you with the chocolate bar and with the stew scene. It's just like, there's a little hitch in my gut. Like, oh God, that's uncomfortable.
You know? Right.
And I don't know what it is about specifically horror movies, even when there's not anything gross happening with the food, it's just something about it makes it gross.
I think in the instance of this movie, like, Joey just looks dirty and not, he just looks dirty. So yeah. When you see someone eating like that and they already look dirty, it's like, mm-hmm. I always say that I feel really bad when I see children out with their parents and they have, I call it lollipop face.
Oh,
where yeah. they're just covered in sticky dirt from the sucker they ate, and mm-hmm. kids in dirty clothes. Like, that just really, it just makes me sick to my stomach. Yep. And much like Joey kind of presented himself like that. And like Ethel and Junior, they were just dirty people. So yeah. The fact that like she was just any type of food in that house, like I felt bad for the damn chicken and that was already dead.
I felt bad for the drifter getting ready to eat her slop.
Well, that's probably why he only stuck around for the one meal. He's like, I'd rather starve.
That's not a euphemism, by the way.
What slop did she really offer him, though?
Exactly. I knew you were going there. I'm like, nope. I don't even want to think about that slop getting eaten.
Oh, she filled his belly all right.
Are you implying she's a squirter?
She fed him the slop and then he had her as a snack.
Oh, this episode went off the rails.
It really did. It's been a while since it's really gone off the rails.
This is true. Leave it to Friday the 13th. It'll always find a way.
Exactly. But anyway, man. Junior and Ethel are dead.
And we have some... And we have some yummy Ethel stew.
I don't know why that struck me so fucking funny.
Meanwhile, back at the halfway house.
Oh, Jake is kicking it to Robin.
Oh my God, that is so awkward because they're watching a movie.
Wait, rewind. There's one crucial moment. Pam's driving along the road and her car stalls. And as she gets out, we get the third act storm start to roll.
Oh, that's right.
And she runs off into the night. And then we cut back to the halfway house. So go ahead.
Meanwhile, in the living room, Jake and Robin are watching a movie. And it's so awkward because the way that it's shot, it looks like she is kind of like cuddled up against him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you know, we've both been here for 8 months. And she's like, uh-huh. Just kind of like, all right, shut up. Like, uh-huh. Well, I'm watching the movie. And then it's just so awkward because he's like, I like you like a lot. And she's like, uh-huh. I like you too. And he's like, a lot. And she's like, what? And he goes, I want to make love with you.
No, he says, I want to make love to you.
Yeah, he's got that little stutter in there.
He said with you, which is what I thought was like, who says that?
No, he stuttered though when he said,
make love with you. And then Robin just starts laughing, which is not cool.
No, well, that's the thing. It's like, man, if you get that kind of response, like, you're just over. Like, at that point, you just don't come out of your room for a while. Like,
right.
Cause,
and I wrote down, what a bitch.
Right. Well, and she can't stop laughing. He's like, I didn't mean it. It was a lie. I didn't mean it. And then he runs away.
And he gets
away.
Up and he runs away. He goes upstairs to try to talk to Vi. And he knocks on her door. And she's like, what? He's like, I need to talk to you. She goes, can't it wait? And he goes, no. But he walks away. And then, bye, Jake.
Right. Well, that's the thing. Like, I wanted to know exactly what Violet was doing. Because she was like, from the hips down, she was dancing to music. But from the waist up, she was reading a magazine.
It was like, right.
She's listening to music blaring, reading a magazine, and kind of dancing. I'm like, okay, she's got a lot going on right now.
I want to know what he wanted to ask her. Was he going to move on to her and see if she would say yes?
He was using the old shotgun method. He was like, look, I really need to.
I really need to get some.
Yeah, I got to get it in. At this point, I'm desperate. Oh, man. He was going to look for Tommy next. when he says no, he closes the door and he gets the freaking meat cleaver to the head. And it's like, wait, how did he get in? How did he sneak past Reggie and Robin downstairs, make it all the way upstairs? And keep in mind, Jake didn't actually go into Violet's room. He had the door open and he was kind of standing there in the doorway. So Violet didn't see him coming up the stairs. Nobody saw this guy. Like, where the fuck was he? He's there.
He was just there.
He was in the attic.
Yeah. He was pulling a Black Christmas.
Yes. Yes.
Climbed up the outside. Got it. Okay, that makes sense. I haven't thought about that.
That's Ed Gein.
Yeah. But so, Jake's dead now. And we see Robin downstairs finishing watching the movie. She gets up. She tries to wake up Reggie and take him upstairs, but he won't move. So she tucks him in on the couch, turns off the light, and goes upstairs. Now, she starts to undress, and we just get a random Dem Titties moment. Because, like, she's got this like, I don't know, was it like a robe?
Yeah, what it was a little robe with her with her undies on. And then she takes the robe off, and then the subtitle said, Robin toplessly talks to herself in the mirror.
Right, but the way I love the way they framed it, because it's not like she's just undressing. Like, she's not looking at the mirror. She looks away from the mirror. She turns facing the camera and is just like, and Dem Titties. Like, just peels it off, showing them. And then she turns and, yeah, she does the whole, like, oh, Robin, you're so stupid. I did like you, Jake. Like, you know, so it's like she kind of feels like she blew it.
Right. Yeah. So when her song in this movie is, I'm talking to the tits in the mirror. Ooh, yeah. I'm asking them to change their ways.
I really should not have taken a drink.
I heard it too.
When you got the tits in the mirror, I damn near choked. Oh, my God.
So Robin climbs into bed and doesn't. I don't know. Even in the summer, like I sleep in I sleep in a t-shirt and sweats every night. But even in the summer, I have to be like fully enclosed in the blanket. And she's just like, I'm just going to let my titties hang out and get a little chilly.
I love that. Cause yeah, she pulls it up right to the bottom of her tits.
And then she rolls over and opens her eyes and there's dead Jake.
And okay. I have questions because much like in, what was it, Friday the 13th 1, where we were like, how did they not see the corpse on the bunk bed above them before they started fucking? Like,
right.
They were standing there, and the body wasn't covered. It was just laying there. Now, we see her hop up into bed. Like, she's facing the bed when she hops up. Jake was clearly not covered up because he's not covered up when we see him. How did she jump into the bed and not see Jake? Plus, it's a fucking twin bed. How was there room for two grown adults?
She was very lean.
So, and he was too.
But yeah. Still, like, you would have felt there's another body in the bed.
I feel like small people would be able to have sex as grown-ups in a twin bed. This is not something I know anything about.
I was going to say, I don't know how that feels. Oh, man. But so, she screams and rolls over and gets the hand over her mouth, and then the machete up through the mattress and stabs her. The Jason killings, they really like to stab through mattresses.
She gets the Bacon death, the Kevin Bacon death.
Right, and that's like, well, in the last one, we got the Kevin Bacon through the raft. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. Jason really likes to stab through an object to get to his victim.
It adds drama.
Right. So now we cut to Violet doing the robot.
No, this is, okay, so let's back up, because I'm going to tell you why they killed, why Roy killed Jake and Robin.
Okay.
So he killed Jake just for shits and giggles, because he had to kill somebody. He killed Robin for laughing at Jake. So now we're in Violet's room where she's pretending that she's at the Continental. Now, her dancing is not, I've seen better mirror dancers in my time at the Continental.
Oh, yeah.
That's why she had to die. That and that song, what were the lyrics? Like, there's a man with no light in his eyes.
Something.
But she's like dancing like she's in Devo or something, like pretend mirror wall in front of her, and she had to go.
It sounded like a Clan of Xymox cover band. It was bad. But I have to say, like, okay, I'm sure you guys have had this before, but is there ever a scene in a film that just triggers a memory, like really hard? Like, you have completely vivid memory. Have you ever had that happen before?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. This scene, for whatever reason, I don't know why, and it's particularly this scene. It's not the whole movie, but every single time I watch this scene, I have a very vivid memory of watching this movie as a kid in my old house on 22nd Street around Halloween. Like, it was fall outside. I remember it being a Saturday night. My parents weren't in the house. It was me and my brother watching this movie, and I could, like, see the living room the way it was set up, but sitting on the floor playing with G.I. Joes on a footstool and kept looking up to see when she was going to get killed. Like, and I remember this scene so fucking vividly. It's weird how that fucking happens with some movies. But anyway, so Violet's dancing, and we see someone come in behind her. She hears a noise, turns, and there's no one there. Because, of course, there isn't. So she goes back to dancing. Then the killer sneaks up on her, grabs her by the throat, stabs her in the belly. Violet's dead. Downstairs, Reggie wakes up, and he goes upstairs looking for anybody. He goes into Tommy's room wondering if he's back yet, and lightning happens to flash at that very moment. So we see the bodies of Jake, Violet, and Robin stacked on his bed like fucking Jenga bricks. You know?
Tommy's the killer.
Right. And Reggie backs out in horror. Pam grabs him, and he fucking shrieks. Like, I love the Reggie scream, because it is so damn high-pitched. I'm going to have to try to find a clip of it. It's so funny.
Also, just to back up for a moment, the song that Violet was mirror dancing to is called His Eyes, and it's by a band called Pseudo Echo.
That sounds about right.
Yes. I wonder if they're on Spotify.
Pseudo Echo. I'm gonna have to see if I can find them.
It's on YouTube. I just googled it because I wanted to know who sang it.
Nice. I shall look this up. But I love this scene, because let's put it this way: Pam is not a great actress. Like, the character, or the woman who plays Pam, she's not very good. And this sequence is fucking hilarious, because her delivery of these lines are so rapid fire that it's laughable. Like, when Reggie shrieks, she goes, "What is it, Reggie? It's Pam. What's the matter? What's the matter? It's me. It's me. It's Pam. What is it? What is it? Reggie?" Like, it's said just like that. Like, it is that fast. I'm like, you couldn't have done a second take. That was terrible. But so Reggie tells her to check Tommy's room. She goes in and screams, and then runs back out, grabs Reggie, and they run away. As they're running, Reggie trips, because of course he does. It's a horror movie. And then she starts going, get up, Reggie, get up.
Trip? It looks like she fucking pushes him down. Like, she's trying to make him go faster, and his little legs aren't as long as hers yet. So he falls, and then she's like, God damn it, Reggie, get up.
And I love it, because now Jason explodes through the door. He doesn't just burst through the door. The door blows out. like, there is wood shrapnel that goes flying. I have questions here. If it was Jason, all right, I could buy it. He's a force of nature. He's a fucking juggernaut. I get it. This is Roy the Medic. was the door just made out of cardboard? Like,
he's in a rage, much like Vic totally got, much like Tommy loses himself when he gets, feels threatened, and he gets that ninja superhuman strength. Roy is, his blood is pumping. He's killed a mirror dancer, Dem Titties, Jake. He killed a guy in a crapper. Like, he's like, I'm fucking riding high now.
So he has crazy strength is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Gotcha. So he bursts in, they scream and run, and they run outside. They find the ambulance by the side of the road. They open the door, and we see Douche Medic falls out with his throat slashed. And then Jason pops up on the other side of the ambulance like, peekaboo! Reggie shrieks again and runs off into the night. And Pam tries to find him. She can't keep up. Jason follows Pam. And then Pam finds dead Matt with a railroad spike through his head stuck to a tree. Just like, oh, so that's what happened to Matt.
I'm really sad that they cut a lot of the death scenes, because I would have loved to see exactly how Matt ended up there.
Right. And what happened to the other medic. Like, I mean, it just...
Right.
Why was the ambulance out there in the first place? Like, it was out by the camp again.
Maybe they were just driving around. Maybe Roy was on the job. Maybe asshole medic found his Jason costume. And he was like, well, I didn't like you anyway, so...
You told me to get my hands dirty, so fuck you, you're dead. I'm listening to what you said.
Is this dirty enough for you, bitch?
You're gonna get it, bitch. So Pam runs to the office back at Pinehurst, and then we get suddenly dead Gramps thrown through the window. I was like, this is the third movie in a row where Jason has thrown a corpse through the window.
That's what I put, much like Good Value Stephen King.
So Pam runs out screaming. Jason slowly follows. Now, this part annoys the piss out of me every time I watch it. Pam falls, because of course she does. And now she just doesn't get up. She crawls around in the mud, flailing about like a fucking fish out of water as Jason slowly walks up. She's like, no, no, get away. No. And it's like, oh, my God, stand the fuck up and run. Like, he's walking.
Maybe she was so scared that she was literally paralyzed with fear.
Maybe, but I don't know. She was flopping pretty good. So.
She was. Maybe her dem braless titties were helping her.
They got covered in mud and just weighing her down. Is that...
Yes. They got waterlogged because there was no bra. So she couldn't stand upright anymore.
Oh my God. They're waterlogged. Oh shit. Been a while since we've, like, several of us have gotten broken in an episode. Oh, we gotta find what makes Maurice break.
Yes.
Besides watching Blood Rage.
So Pam's crawling around, waterlogged, boobies weighing her down. And suddenly, the barn, okay, so remember, I wanna be where the people are. The barn door just explodes, and here comes a big fucking tractor that Reggie is driving, and Jason, like, stands up, or Jason stops pursuing Pam, and when you first watch it, it looks almost like Reggie's running Pam over to hit Jason, but then somehow Jason is, like, 20 feet in front of Pam.
Right.
And goes flying backwards.
Why
is he just standing there?
Right. Again, this whole sequence bugs me, because Jason walks up to Pam. He raises the machete like he's going to kill. She's like, no, no, don't. And then the barn explodes. It's like, dun, 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 Reggie to the rescue. And I wrote, he hits Jason going all at 10 miles an hour. And it's like, Jason goes fucking flying. But here's the thing. Jason never moves. Reggie is slowly coming up on him. He just stands there holding his machete in the air like, oh, I'm frozen. I can't move. It's like, really?
Maybe his dick got waterlogged and it was weighing his legs down.
Oh, God. You know what it reminded me of is that scene in Austin Powers with the steamroller.
It's like, oh, my God.
No! Go, move! Get out of the way! Stop! Get out of the
way! Yes.
And you see, like, the distance between him and the steamroller. That's what it felt like. But anyway, he goes flying. And then Pam and Reggie, like, gingerly walk up to him. And I wrote, Jason lay there like a slug. It was his only defense. Jason suddenly grabs Reggie. Reggie shrieks yet again. Pam boots Jason to the head, and they go running into the barn. Now Jason gets up, and we see he's bleeding pretty heavily from the gut where he was hit with the tractor. And he follows him in the barn and proceeds to look for him. And now Jason hears a noise in this little supply shed. And he goes to investigate, and Pam jumps out with a chainsaw. And it's like, he backs up. He's like, oh, bitch.
And then we have the classic machete versus chainsaw.
And I love the fact that Jason is fighting one-handed. He's holding back a chainsaw with a machete with one hand.
While he's bleeding from the gut.
Right. Like, apparently, Roy really got that crazy strength. But... So she clips him in the other arm. Like, she gets him with the saw for a second. He falls back, and she slowly approaches, like, I'm going to savor this. Like, she's coming at him with the saw. And then it stalls, because everything for Pam stalls.
Yep.
And then she starts pulling the cord, like, uh-oh, uh-oh. He slowly gets up, and she's like, have a chainsaw. And she just throws it at him.
And he's like, you won't get me again, bitch. I dodged that. If you can dodge a chainsaw, you can dodge a ball.
Exactly. Oh, I love that movie. So he gets out of the way. She goes running and climbs up to the loft where Reggie is. And Jason slowly starts coming after him. And then Tommy appears in the doorway.
And he's like, here's Tommy.
And he's like, Jason. And then Jason turns and faces Tommy. And Pam and Reggie are screaming for Tommy to run. They're like, get out of here, go, run. And he starts hearing his younger self, you know, saying the whole, Jason, remember, Jason. And then it's like, die, 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 Tommy, no. Like that whole loop again.
Yep.
Jason walks up to Tommy, slashes him across the chest with his machete. Tommy falls over, grabs his knife out of his boot or his butt. I don't know where he was hiding it.
His butt.
His boot butt, yes, it's like a trunk. He had it in his trunk. There we go.
He got it so easily because maybe he was wearing a thong. Let me pull that knife out of my thong.
Oh, Lord.
No.
That's Cisco's second hit. But so he pulled the knife out.
Oh
man, we got the giggles this episode.
We do.
He pulls out the knife and he stabs Jason in the thigh, which looks like it really fucking hurt. Jason falls over, grabbing at his balls, like, ah, shit, you nicked him.
You know? I like to think that he stabbed him in the dick. I mean, it was waterlogged. It was weighing him down.
Exactly.
The banana hammock was losing support.
So Tommy gets up and starts running to the ladder, or like flailing toward the ladder. He's holding his chest. He's bleeding. And Jason slowly props himself up. Tommy climbs up the ladder. Jason looks up like, oh, you motherfuckers. Okay. And he starts climbing the ladder too. He gets to the top and Tommy is laying there looking like he's dead. Jason kind of boots him a little bit with his foot. Tommy doesn't move. He just kind of flops over. He's like, all right, he's good. And he starts looking around for Reggie and Pam. Well, he sees Reggie hiding behind some hay.
He really didn't do a good job of hiding himself either. No. He like positioned himself between two bales of hay.
And he looked like a little groundhog because as soon as Jason saw him, he ducked back down. Like,
it was like whack-a-mole.
Right. So Jason, oh my God, Jason hacks at the piece of wood in front of the hay bale. And Reggie's just kind of smiling at him like, hey, okay, you can go away now. And fucking Pam comes up with a stick and starts beating him.
Go on now, get.
So she starts hitting him with a stick, and he just grabs it like, get the fuck out of here with that shit.
He's like, what the woman, are you tripping?
Hitting me with a stick, motherfucker. And so she backs away and almost falls out of the hayloft, and now we see the spikes below. Like, it's some piece of farm equipment. I don't know, it was like a thresher or what. But there's like these big jagged pieces of metal sticking up. So she backs away from the edge, and Jason has kind of got her cornered. She's kind of trying to deke him out, but he's getting closer and closer. And then it's Reggie from the top rope. He jumps out and fucking drops an elbow on Jason's back. And he falls out the loft. And so Pam and Reggie go, they inch closer to the edge. And of course, Jason's not down yet. He jumps up and grabs Reggie by the boot or by the foot and starts pulling Reggie with him. Pam's pulling Reggie on the other side. They're screaming. Tommy slowly comes to, gets the machete, walks over to Jason, hacks his hand. Jason falls, lands on the spikes, mask gets knocked off, and we reveal it's Roy. So, dun, dun, dun.
And he would have gotten away with it, too, if it wasn't for that meddling kid.
I wrote almost that exact same thing. I wrote, it's old Mr. Roy, and he would have gotten away with it, too, if it wasn't for those pesky kids.
Now, I have a question. So, a hockey mask, okay, you can get that pretty much anywhere. But he had another, like, rubber mask.
Oh, yeah, covering under his head.
Where did he get that? Like, did nobody think that it was odd that, like, old man Roy, the paramedic, wants a deformed latex face mask?
Right. He was a big fan of Tom Savini. He made it in his basement.
Maybe Tommy made it for him.
Ah, he stole one of Tommy's masks.
Mm-hmm.
There we go. But so now we cut from seeing Roy impaled on the spikes to the hospital, and we see Pam looking kind of shell-shocked. Reggie's laying on her lap asleep. The cops come up to her, and now we get the exposition. The sheriff explains that Joey was Roy's kid, and that seeing him dead like that must have caused Roy to go crazy, and he used the Jason story to cover up the murders.
So a couple things I want to bring up. Mm-hmm. So the sheriff is explaining this. He opens up Roy's wallet to show the picture of Joey. But the first picture on top is a picture of Roy himself.
Right.
Why does he have a picture of himself in his wallet?
He was a narcissist.
Old school selfie.
And then, the sheriff opens up the newspaper clippings. Where the fuck did a newspaper get a dating profile pic of Jason? Because that pose, it's like... My name is Jason Voorhees. I enjoy brisk walks in the woods. I love a good hunt. And I'm very much against premarital sex and drugs. I also love my mama.
Dislike swimming and premarital sex.
Yes.
But yeah, so he gives the exposition. And then we see Pammy go... Pammy? Yeah, Jesus, I can speak. Pam going to see Tommy. And she opens the door, and there's just this creepy old nurse sitting there for some reason. Like, she has no line. She just looks at Pam and nods, smiling. That's it.
Like that. Oh, my God. What does that mean? Because she gives the nod, like, very good.
He might be on suicide watch. They might have someone watching him.
Maybe, but, like, she just looked creepy.
She was kind of cute.
We found the one Maurice wanted in the movie. Oh, man. But so she walks over to Tommy, and, you know, she's kind of looking down at him. He looks up at her, and then he pulls back the blanket, has a machete, stabs her in the gut, and starts laughing like crazy. And then suddenly we see Tommy waking up in covered in sweat in a hospital room alone. So he's laying there, clearly another nightmare. And he looks up, and we see bloody Jason standing at the foot of his bed. And at first he looks scared, then he gets calm, and Jason slowly fades away. So Tommy pulls the IV out, gets up, and goes over to the dresser in the hospital room. He opens it up, and for some reason Roy's mask is there? I have questions.
Yeah, I don't know why he has that.
Right. How did, first of all, okay, maybe he picked it up. Fine. When he was admitted to the hospital, where was he hiding that? Is the trunk that big? Can he
fit? Right.
I mean,
we've already said, Maurice has said that prison mental institution, maybe not that different.
But he also has another surprise that we're going to find out in a minute.
Yes.
He hears something and he looks nervously like toward the door. And then we see Pam approaching his room. As she gets to the outside of the room, we hear the window shatter inside. She rushes in. We see the windows all broken out, and she thinks Tommy has fled the hospital. Suddenly, the door closes behind her. We see Tommy wearing the hockey mask. He raises a butcher knife. Where the fuck did that come from? Like
He carries it around with him.
But here's the thing. The pocket knife, as much as ouch, you know, that at least folds up. That's a butcher knife. That, no, you better not sit down. That's not, no. But we zoom in on Tommy's eyes. They look crazy. We cut to black. Credits roll. The end. So, did Tommy kill her? We don't know. And we never find out.
Right. Just like we don't know what the fuck happened to Trish.
Right. The Jarvis story is a little hinky at times.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there was a lot of trivia for this. We already mentioned quite a bit of it. But a few moments, without counting laughing or yelling, Tommy Jarvis only says 24 words throughout the entire film, which I found that kind of interesting. And then, like you'd mentioned, the sex scenes were cut way down. There was a 3-minute-long sex scene, and the MPAA forced them to cut it down. And then apparently Deborah Voorhees lost a teaching job later in life when schools discovered her sex scene in the film. Which I think is pretty fucked up. It's like, you know, come on.
I mean, it might have. It. I don't know. I got nothing. I think it's stupid.
Yeah, that bugged me when I read that. I'm like, that's dumb. And like we had said before, a lot of people, though they say this is like one of the low points in the franchise, it actually did really well at the box office and actually blew Part 4 out of the water. And they said that the producers, Frank Mancuso Jr., said that it was like the golden times of Friday the 13th again. Like, they brought in that kind of money. Now, granted, after it had been out for a little while, it started doing really poorly. So its longevity wasn't the same as previous installments. But its initial box office take, like, I didn't find the actual numbers, but everything on here was like it had a really good time in the box office. And this is the first film in the entire series where Jason is actually referred to by his full name of Jason Voorhees. In Friday the 13th Friday the 13th 1, 2, and the final chapter, so Part 4, he's only referred to as Jason, while in Part 3, he's not referred by name at all. So this is the first time we get the full name, which I thought that was kind of interesting. Another little moment is the movie that Jake and Robin were watching is a film called A Place in the Sun from 1951. And apparently one of the things that the film revolves around is one of the main characters drowning in a lake, which is kind of funny that's I'm sure why they put it in the movie.
Yeah.
And it says here, I don't know if this is true. This could be one of those IMDb things, but it says that John Shepard researched the role of Tommy by working in a state mental hospital. So I thought that was kind of cool.
Maybe that's how he learned to hide things in his bum.
That's how I hide everything now. Where I hide everything now. I don't know if I said hide or how.
Note or to what. Self. Do not accept any presents from Maurice.
Especially if you don't see me bring them in.
Was that in the boot?
Oh, was that in your hand the whole time?
Yes.
No.
Apparently, Mark Venturini was originally considered for the role of Teenage Tommy, but he ended up as Vic instead. But I thought that was kind of cool. I'm like, oh, that would have been funny, you know, to have Tommy Jarvis played by two Return of the Living Dead alumni, you know. But that's pretty neat. And then, I think that's about it. I mean, there's a lot of stuff, but so definitely, you know, if you're looking for trivia on Friday the 13th, go check out IMDb. It's like 3 pages long. There's plenty of fun stuff to read. But yeah, I guess anything else you guys want to mention about this episode? Like, I know we always go long when it's Friday the 13th just because there's so much to say.
I got nothing.
Sorry, you guys kind of talked over. Well, go ahead.
We both said we've got nothing.
Oh, okay. yeah, I mean, there's not a lot more to say other than it's a fun fucking movie. If you like Friday the 13th, it's definitely worth your time. It's a pretty unique entry into the series. I do think this and Part 9 are comparable in the idea that it's other people doing the killing. It's not technically Jason.
Right.
So the fact that they're the two entries into the franchise that really tried something different. And it's kind of, yeah, they're mostly the most loathed films of the franchise by many, but I think it's a fun movie. It's like we said at the start, lots of fun kills, really funny moments. I mean, shit, we were laughing throughout this entire episode. Great characters, you know.
We were also talking about poop. Which and always that, makes us giggle.
And that is good cinema, damn it.
Exactly. Banana hammocks and waterlogged boobies.
Oh, damn titties.
And waterlogged dick.
True. Right.
Oh, Lordy. Well.
Just one last thing, now that you mentioned that, because 5 and 9 kind of went away from the traditional, like, arc with the franchise, being the two that people typically hate, it's the same thing for Halloween 3.
Oh, and yeah.
For me, that's one of my favorites. That's one of my favorite just movies.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I mean, I think that's something that the masses kind of feel like. It's that whole thing of like, it's different, therefore I don't like it. It's kind of like when a sequel or a remake does something drastically different with the source material, it's usually the least popular. Like, people don't like it because it's not what they expect.
Rob Zombie's Halloween.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly.
But I love it.
Same. And I've often said, I mean, I know I've said this on the show before, so I'm just repeating myself, but when it comes to remakes, I want them to do something different, because otherwise, what the fuck is the point?
Right.
You know, it's like, look at Psycho. Like, oh, okay, we got a butthole and a masturbation scene. That doesn't really make it worthy of remaking Psycho. You know, it's like, I want something new with the source material. I want to see, like, tell me a similar story, you know, hit the same plot points, but do it in a new way. That makes it worthwhile to watch, in my opinion. So that's why I love Halloween 1 and 2, the remakes. I thought they were fantastic.
Yep.
And eventually I would love to get Halloween 2 on here. I know we did the first, but I would love to get Part 2, because that one's hated by so many people, but I really love it. Like, yeah, I genuinely enjoy it. Yeah. One of these days, we're just going to do a Rob Zombie month or so, and we'll lose all of our listeners.
Not all of them.
Just most of them.
Yeah. I was going to say, but I've heard a lot of people that listen to the show are like, ah, fuck Rob Zombie. I'm like, I like him. But anyway, should probably mention our social media, which is The Boogeyman's Closet on Facebook and Instagram. Maurice is in charge of our Twitter, which is...
Yep. Boogeyman's The.
Thank you, good sir. And we, as I've been mentioning, and I will continue to mention in every episode, we have contests running or giveaways running every month right up through the end of the year. I do want to say we have been gifted so many awesome gifts to give to you guys from fans and from friends that we are going to be able to do at least 2 giveaways for Christmas. So we are going to do 2 separate giveaways in December. And that's all because of you guys, because you guys have given us so many generous donations. So thank you. And we will continue to spread that joy, you know, to all of our fans, which really means a lot. So we just announced our winner for the July giveaway. We will. Well, actually, by the time you hear this, the August giveaway will be up and running. So definitely check the social media for a chance to win some awesome stuff. And I know our last 3 episodes, we had guests. So I want to thank all of our guests for appearing on the show. And I just want to say out there, if you want to be a guest on the show, like if you listen to this and you're like, oh, I'd really like to jump in on this episode or talk about this movie, you know, let us know, because we're doing this remotely now. We used to do this in all together, which I would love to do again as well. But it's a lot easier to bring in guests remotely. So just let us know. Give us a shout out. Tell us what you want to do, and we'll gladly have people on. Like, we always have a blast with it.
Especially if you want to cover Rob Zombie's Halloween 2. We'll make that a fucking special.
Yes. So, yeah, I think that's about it, unless you guys have any last things to add.
Nope.
Nope.
I'm not going to tell people. Yeah. I'm not going to tell people to watch it, because I'm sure everyone has seen it.
True.
At least, so.
All right. Well, then, this is Mike saying goodbye.
See ya.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed what you heard, follow us on Instagram at The Boogeyman's Closet, where you can stay up to date with everything we have planned.